I'm Dan Masterson, host of Strategy Talk, where we take a unique view of world events. We report news as history. With me today is the editor of StrategyPage.com and well-known military author, Jim Dunnigan. Associate editor and syndicated columnist, Austin Bay, also joins us.
Welcome, Austin and Jim. It's been an ongoing thing, but this last week, Hamas start up their ante on the rockets into Israel. There was a deep penetration, Jim. How did that happen? What's changed just recently? Why has it begun to escalate again?
Well, it's been brewing for at least a month. The number of rockets being fired from Gaza into southern Israel has increased, especially in the last 4 weeks. Hamas, it says it's trying to comply with the ceasefire that was signed after the 2012 invasion of Gaza. And they blame it on minority, smaller terrorist groups, and that they can't control it. The Israelis tell them, call BS on that, because the fact of the matter is that the smaller groups are challenging Hamas for control of Gaza. And Hamas is basically more concerned with staying in power than with complying with any agreement with Israel. Now, what really triggered the current, escalation was the kidnapping and murder of three Israeli teenagers back in June. This resulted in apparently some Israelis grabbing a Palestinian teenager and burning him to death. Which further escalated the bad feelings. And Hamas basically grabbed this and said that, all right, since we're being blamed by Israel for the kidnapping, let's go to war. Now, there's more to it than that. Hamas is in big trouble. They're running out of money. They recently made an agreement with Abbas to Fatah to basically merge and solve the problem that both of them were encountering with their Arab backers, as it were, the Arab oil states that contribute a lot of money to the Palestinians. These groups had gotten fed up, especially with Hamas, and were basically threatening to, cut funding if the Palestinians didn't get their act together. So the recent, merger agreement was supposed to do that, but of course that merger agreement, as many people predicted, was stillborn. The Hamas and Fatah have immediately fell to arguing over who would control what. Hamas basically feels like they're up against the wall, as it were, and now they really are, because now they're firing the long-range rockets, the M-302s, that they've snuck in from Iran. These, by the way, 40 of these were captured by the Israelis, I think it was in March, in the Red Sea on a cargo ship, which the Israeli intelligence had been tracking the Israelis tracked the missiles being flown to Iran. That raised suspicions. The M-302s are Syrian-made and based on a Chinese design. And then earlier this year, they launched another spy satellite, which is apparently being put to good use, because they track the missiles from Syria being loaded on a ship in Iran. And then that ship had loaded into it a lot of bags of cement, which conveniently were piled right over the missiles. So the Israelis sent naval commandos out to grab the ship as it was off the coast of, approaching the coast of Sudan, I think it was off Eritrea. And sure enough, they found 40 missiles and a lot of other stuff. They brought this back to Israel, the ship, and let UN inspectors join in the investigation. And the UN just recently, after the escalation, as it were, issued a report saying, we concur with the Israelis that the Iranians were trying to smuggle M-302s into Sudan, and then the UN agreed that most of them were probably going not to the Sudanese, but to be smuggled into Gaza. The ones that have been used so far, about four or five of them, I believe, have been Donnie, earlier the Israelis got wind of that. They were basically taken apart because these things are about, 5 meters, 16 feet long. They weigh over a ton. They're too big for the smuggling tunnels. So the Israelis got information, apparently with the help of the Egyptians, who are now anti-Hamas with the change of government in Egypt last year. And they said, oh, my God, this is dangerous, because several of those missiles, I think about 24 of them, were fired by Hezbollah, who got them direct from Syria, in the 2006 war. Now, the big difference now is the Israeli has, I think, 7 or 8 batteries of Iron Dome deployed, and they've been knocking these down if the Iron Dome computer indicates that they're going to hit an inhabited area. But there's still a danger because they have a range of 160 kilometers, meaning they can reach just about anywhere in Israel, and some have been fired at cities, large cities. They're believed to have a warhead that is optimized for anti-personnel casualties, namely Israeli civilians, and that's indeed what the warheads on the ones fired by Hezbollah in 2006 were basically designed for. So this is a serious business for the Israelis. They've mobilized 40,000 troops, and apparently the only debate within Israel is, do we shut down Hamas entirely, or do we simply go in there and rub their face in the dirt and get them to cry uncle again? Now, a lot of Israelis are saying, look, it didn't work the last time. It's time we just basically reoccupied Hamas, get Gaza. And as some Israelis are saying, let's make a deal with the Egyptians and let them hack it. The Egyptians are a little leery about that because they don't want nearly 2 million Palestinians, to deal with. But the Egyptians at the same time know that Gaza has become a hideout, a sanctuary, as it were, for a lot of Islamic terrorists who are making war on Egypt. I think it's a death match this time. I think it's a fight to the death. And Hamas is going to lose. It's simply a question of how many Palestinian civilians are going to die in the process, and Israeli civilians.
Austin, your thoughts on what Jim said?
Well, I've had a suspicion, one of those gut reactions that this might be a death match. I'm not sure why I think that, other than one of the predecessory acts this time was the murder of three Jewish teenagers, and then the subsequent response by some radical Israelis murdering a Palestinian kid. And that's the this war at a very ugly and direct and personal level. You saw, and I don't usually take this approach, as you and Jim well know, in discussing these kind of issues, but ugly, brutal, cold-blooded murders, and the Israelis have arrested several people that they believe to be involved in, and they're going to prosecute them. And they've also, I believe they've captured a couple of people they believe that were involved in the murder of the three Jewish teenagers. I say that because I think at least one of the Jewish teenagers actually had American citizenship. But so you've got a situation there that shows just how ugly and personal this can be, and yet at some level the Israeli government is trying to act as a responsible and civilized government to deal with that kind of crime. The murders galvanized the Israeli population again. Even the left flank, the so-called peace flank, that has, and then there's some people on that left flank. I don't want to sound like I'm running them all down. There are many of them saying, "Hey, look, we've got to find a way of accommodating and living with the moderates that do exist in the Palestinian community," and those people do exist, but as our coverage on Strategy Page shows, and a lot of the Jim's, I praise Jim on this regularly, because he's been covering this. I know he's been covering this for 40 years. The hateful propaganda that the Palestinian radicals succeed in imposing on the Palestinian, or they spew to the Palestinian community, and it's they're not moderates at all, and they have they've succeeded, Dan, in producing here I said that moderates do exist, but they've also produced a cadre of permanent warriors. That's part of it is that, you know, they can give them not just give them the propaganda, but they can give them a bomb, and they can give them some prestige, and the radicals give them a little money as well. I think the Israelis have reached a point, and I'm not sure where that point was. I think it begins somewhere after 2006 in that rocket war with Hezbollah in southern Lebanon, and the difficulty of that operation. And something happens in 2012 with another one of the issues with Hamas. Despite the knowledge that there are many Palestinian Arabs that look for the opportunity to do business with the Israelis, open the border, and everybody benefit economically from that. The refuseniks, the radicals, can destroy that with a grenade, with a suicide bomber, or with a rocket. And the way this operation, what is it? I think it's called Protective Edge, is going. Looks to me like the Israelis are on the verge. I don't know if the decision's been made yet, Dan. I've told you, I'm kind of going, looking at, even though I've gone through this, was kind of an emotional drama here. These have political effects. They have psychological effects. And, you know, it's not just Baron von Clausewitz, but he was very good about this. You set the political effects, and that's, war is politics by other means, by force. And take a look. Now let's move to some of the military aspects of it. I've read, and as a matter of fact, just before we started today's program, I checked to see how many targets the Israelis have hit in Gaza. And there's one group that said somewhere between 300 and 400. Another one says 800. And actually, there are a number of estimates out there. That's a lot of targets. But they're also talking about precision, small precision munitions. Now, we've written about this on Strategy Page. What does it mean? The Israelis have a number of them. Hellfires are an example of it. But they've got smaller systems and the like, and ability to hit to hit an apartment window. And the apartment window of a radical Palestinian leader. And one of the reports I read yesterday talked about just doing that. One of these proxy groups, Jim mentioned the Hamas claims that some of the smaller groups were responsible for this and they can't control them. Hey, there's a lot of a lot of back scratching between Hamas and these smaller groups. And the Israelis put that out in their media, Israeli intelligence, so it can document it. So one of the little jihad group leaders had his apartment and office struck with these pinpoint munitions. Those are direct personal attacks on an enemy, and the Israelis are look like they're going to carry it through. Let's go back to Jim's discussion of the Syrian missile that the Iranians have supplied to the M-302s to Hamas. Well, they are firing them deeper. And Dimona, everybody knows what Dimona is. I think the nickname for the place is the laundromat, or at least it was at one time. It's a nuclear facility, a nuclear reactor, and that's where the Israelis build their nuclear weapons. And Hamas's spokesman the other day was saying, hey, we're shooting at Dimona. We want to get a hit on it. Well, best I can say, maybe Jim's got some better figures than that, but Iron Dome has succeeded in shooting down about 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 of the missiles. The Iron Dome systems are sited to protect civilian populations and key infrastructure, just like Dimona. And they're frustrating Hamas's ability to launch that attack. But the Israelis see since 2006, and remember I mentioned 2006 a second ago, an escalation in capabilities or an increase in capabilities by the near enemies being Hezbollah and Hamas. They know that Iran uses them as proxy forces, the quick strike to keep Israel off balance, and the Israelis say, maybe it's time for us to deal with the close enemy, the enemy to Iran's forward forces. So I've given you some speculation, but some reasons why, and there's, you know, missiles they're targeting, and also a psychological read. The psychological read, anybody, and it's just an opinion, but I've also seen a lot of what has gone on since those murders, Dan, in the press, and it's I got a hunch that Jim's death match is right.
Jim, what was the motivation for the kidnappings and murders by Hamas?
Well, the Israelis identified two Hamas members, this is about a week ago, and distributed pictures as the likely, you know, involved, if not the, the organizers of the kidnapping. But what has probably happened here is the, how should I put it, fragmentation of Hamas. There has always been Hamas presence in the West Bank, but it has been constantly, you know, under pressure by the Fatah as well as the Israelis, because these a lot of these Hamas members in the West Bank are there basically to try and carry out terrorism attacks inside Israel, which they have not been very successful at. Although they have gotten some Israeli Arabs to participate, often unsuccessfully, in attacks. It's quite likely that Hamas was involved, but not from orders from, you know, Hamas leadership in Gaza, but simply local Hamas leaders who saw an opportunity, because what Hamas has been doing, they do recognize the fact that, you know, Islamic terrorism has to operate in a, how should I put it, a distributed fashion, not under a central command, but simply to encourage, you know, true believers wherever they are to strike, to do anything. Because basically the Israelis shut down the Palestinian terrorism campaign, which started in 2000, we're talking 14 years ago. They shut it down about 6 years ago. They basically developed new tactics, going after the leaders, the bomb builders, et cetera, et cetera. And so there have basically been no terrorism attacks inside of Israel, you know, for years. You know, one or two incidents a year, but, you know, no real attacks like, you know, at one point, you know, hundreds of Israelis were being killed a year, or killed or wounded. The and this has been very frustrating, especially to Hamas, which justifies its existence and everything it does by its goal of destroying Israel. They make no secret of that. In fact, the Fatah has interestingly come out in support of the current, you know, barrages of rockets that Hamas is firing, and said, "We are with you." Yet they're not joining in. I gather because the Israelis have told them, "You guys join in. We know where your leaders live. You know, we know where your police and et cetera are. They'll both be out of business or incarcerated within 24 hours." The, you know, Fatah is crazy, but they're not stupid. So they're talking the talk, but they're not going to walk the walk. But this shows you where, as Austin points out, where the propaganda has been for decades, especially from, you know, Fatah. I mean, the Arabs in general have had this Israel must be destroyed thing going, you know, since, you know, they lost the first war in 1948. But they learned the hard way, especially after 73, that a conventional war with Israel doesn't work because you're going to lose. It took several embarrassing defeats before that sunk into all concerns. And so they're falling back on terrorism, but terrorism doesn't work either. The rockets seem like a good way to go, but they haven't been very successful either. I mean, thousands and thousands of rockets. We've reported on this regularly in Strategy Page. They showed the numbers that, you know, they're lucky in a given month to even injure or induce a heart attack among some nervous Israeli, with these rocket attacks. And as Austin intimated, Iron Dome is designed not to fire at every incoming rocket, but basically to calculate the trajectory of the rocket, where it's going to land, and it has a database of all inhabited areas. So this is a real bad time to go on a camping trip out in the wilderness areas, which is what most of Israel is, desert and shrubland. If the rocket is headed for a inhabited area, Iron Dome will fire two rockets, missiles actually, interceptor missiles, and they've been successful about 90% of the time, shooting down a rocket that is headed for an inhabited area. That's why, even though hundreds of rockets have been fired in the last few days, there have been no Israeli casualties, and at least 67 Palestinians have died, and some Palestinian civilians in Gaza have told media that we are voluntarily going to the home of a Hamas leader to serve as human shields. So, this suicidal attitude is something that the Israelis are not going to be stopped by. They say, all right, they will call up, they will say, hey, this incoming, get out of that building or get out of the neighborhood. And that often works, but sometimes it doesn't. And the Israelis will just do what they got to do. It's simply a matter of self-defense. But if you read, especially, you read the comments on the internet, to news stories about what's going on there, you get a lot of people who are true believers. No matter what the Israelis do, they are the aggressors. They are the bad guys. That's taken as it's a matter of faith. And logic and reality has nothing to do with it. But Israel is a democracy. They cannot afford to indulge in these, flights of fantasy. The voters demand protection. And the Israeli Defense Forces, that's what they're there for, they got to hustle. Otherwise, heads will roll, people will be out of a job, careers will be ruined, et cetera, et cetera. Democracy in action. And none of the people who see Israel as the eternal bad guy want to even dwell on that. It's a moral absolute. The Israelis are the Nazis, and the Hamas is simply defending themselves. It's bizarre, but hey, welcome to the wonderful world of partisan politics.
Right. Austin, your comments on the propaganda?
Jim's the one that's been, I said, four decades of coverage on this issue. He has, and it's had effects. Again, instead of taking it from the usual quantitative and analytic perspective we usually take, Dan, I told you I went with a psychological read. I suspect that Jim's statement that this is looks like a death match, it could well be. I can't say that it is for sure, but let's take the comment about human shields. Remember how that used to stymie everything, and you'd see this all over the international press and European press and like? I think the Israelis have reached the point they don't care. You want to go do that? Okay. And the bravado of saying, we're doing this on our own, there's a lot of suspicion whether that's their case or not. The era of the human shield, remember, it used to be they were the bad guys, the ones who employed the human shields. Somehow that changed with the era of left-wing propaganda, and you'd have human shields show up at Iraq when Saddam Hussein was in power in Iraq, and they would chain themselves to an Iraqi defense installation and say, well, I'm here to stop an American attack or whatever. And I'd get tons of coverage, especially in European press. Okay, it's been employed before in the Israeli-Palestinian war fiasco, struggle, and it may stymie in certain cases an Israeli operation, but I'm not so sure that it has the same effect anymore. Again, and here I am, I'm talking about a sensation or a gut read on it, and why? Go back to some things Jim said and what I said, and my first response was, hey, look, capabilities, I know Jim says Hamas is fracturing and it's under pressure. Okay. There's still quite capable. Take a look at the increasing range of the rockets, larger payloads, and the Israelis keep having, you know, their intel's great. They pick them up and they stop them, and no Israeli has been killed yet. But they have to go. I read that there were over 1 million Israelis in air raid shelters yesterday. Okay, well, that's what? 12-15% of the Israeli population? I'm not sure when they were there, but that's an economic hit, Dan, for sure, as well as a huge political problem. Are we going to put up with it? And I think they're tired of it, and they have the power to... they have the power to destroy more than just the infrastructure in Gaza. Again, I don't want to be said, Austin made this prediction. I'm not making a prediction. I'm just telling you, I think the political situation, psychological situation has changed. And it's changed to heading for if not a death match, a showdown. A showdown. It's not going to be the death of the Palestinian radical movement, but a lot of Palestinian radicals are going to die.
Right. Well, we'll be watching it closely over the next few weeks, and people can find our analysis and take on this on Strategy Page. Thank you both today, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Dan. Bye. Bye, guys.
Bye.